I'm Austin.
And I'm Scooter.
And you're listening to the Audio Drama Production Podcast.
Part of the Audio Drama Network.
From a writing aspect, one of the first and foremost important things is believable dialogue.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. We've been running into some weirdness points when working on one of our shows regarding writing believable dialogue between two fantastical fictional characters. So I am particularly curious about what other people are doing to make their dialogue sound fluid and not robotic at all.
Gotcha. See, we have a completely opposite end of the spectrum, because our show kind of thrives on unbelievable dialogue.
Oh, okay.
It's kind of part of the comedy, I guess.
I mean, sometimes that works for us too. It really depends on what we're talking about. If we're talking about something that's a truly fantastical situation, but some episodes, especially ones that we do with Legend Smith, are more tied to reality. So the dialogue has to feel like it's something you could hear in modern day. And then it makes the supernatural element seem more horrible.
Right. Yeah. Well, let's get right on into it. Let's listen to some clips of good examples that we've come up with of good, believable dialogue.
So this is from Casey Wayland, We're Alive, Lockdown, Episode 2. And if you check out the show notes for all of these, we'll have links to them.
What'd you see when you were out there?
It's quiet, kind of creepy. I heard the guy guard in the office.
Mark.
Yeah, Mark was talking to someone over the radio. I think he might have said something to him that Central's gone.
What does he mean, gone?
You don't even know. We could be in here for more than overnight.
Hey, maybe whoever started the fight will come here. Maybe we can get out too.
You ever been in a riot?
Well, no, but
die, and their killers keep walking. And then there's some that will do things, make you wish you were dead.
Oh.
Man, I haven't even been in a fight before.
Never?
Is that them?
That could be anything.
Doesn't sound far.
Yeah, that boy will stay this.
Just shut up!
What does that mean?
Fredo wants his little cronies to get him.
Is he right?
Probably not. Probably.
He's trying to scare you.
That's real close. That's inside the hall.
Back away from the door.
Sir, calm down.
Sir, that's just one person?
Quiet!
What the hell's wrong with him?
Do not make us go in there. Sit down.
It's the drunk in the padded cell.
We'll get you medical aid when we can. Just calm down for now. Can you do that?
We have a situation going on. Until it's resolved, you have to stay in there, okay?
They tell him something, but fuck us, right?
Yeah, no kidding. I know he's not an inmate and all, but seriously.
Just lay down, okay? I'm putting a little pillow through the slot here. Try to get comfortable.
Giving him pillows too? I tell you, they're holding out on us.
All right, good. He's sitting down, finally.
Mark! Hey! I know you're right there. Think you can tell us what's going on now? Don't we deserve to know? Come on! Mark! Mark!
Yeah, so I really appreciate the use of, and this is something I like in a lot of Casey's stuff, the use of silence as part of a conversation, as kind of a word.
Mm-hmm.
And how he kind of goes from, and also how people interrupt each other.
It feels very natural.
It's just so tight.
You can feel, I mean, every aspect of it. You feel the tension, you feel the anger, you feel the fear.
Yeah, and a lot of that comes out in the way that the different lines are performed. But mm-hmm. I think the actors.
Yeah, but you got to have good material to work with first.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I agree. And even the tying in of somebody using Spanish, like, that didn't feel out of place. It didn't feel forced. It just felt very natural. But that's one of the things that I like the most about We're Alive is the dialogue lets you lose yourself in the story. Yeah, we have a monologue from Jeffrey Gardner about his process. He gets into bits and pieces about how he organizes things, even though he's not one of the primary writers. He's pretty involved in being the executive producer. He's pretty involved in the structure of how things are laid out as far as dialogue goes. So let's hear what he has to say about that bit.
Hi, my name is Jeffrey Gardner. I'm the executive producer of Our Fair City and the upcoming Unwell, a Midwestern Gothic mystery, both produced by Heartlife NFP. You know, my perspective might be useful here because I'm actually not a writer. I've been working as an editor, dramaturg, and director for well over a decade now, both for audio drama and for stage plays. So I've got a lot of experience with both developing scripts and supporting writers. So here are my quick thoughts on how to help develop good, vital dialogue. First, and really, you know, the most important thing, and I'm going to say this over and over again, is to have good collaborators. Find artists who you trust. They can be actors, other writers, directors, sound designers, producers, whatever, and show them your work. Have them read your scripts and get their feedback. The more people who you can get kind of an outside perspective on, I think the better you'll understand what you're trying to do, even if it's because you disagree with what they're saying. That can really help crystallize what you're trying to do with your script. And really, that's the most important thing, I think. Taking the note means that you hear what someone is saying and understand that that means that something isn't working for them. It doesn't mean you have to change something, but it does mean that in what you wrote, something wasn't being communicated or something was jarring for a person. So have your scripts read out loud. Now, reading them out loud yourself is going to be useful to a point, but you're always going to be kind of listening in your head rather than out loud. So have other people read them out loud to you, and this is where those collaborators come in. Hearing the words in someone else's voice is going to tell you a lot about how they can be delivered, how natural the dialogue is, and it's also going to get you those perspectives of those other people. So that's going to be a hugely useful thing. If you have access to the actors who are going to be performing your work, have those actors read them out loud. You know, get actors you trust, get actors you like working with. Towards the end of your writing process, before you're going to go into production, I would really strongly recommend bringing in someone who hasn't had anything to do with the production so far. If possible, someone who you haven't told anything about the production, and have them read the script. That fresh set of eyes is going to bring out a whole lot. I promise you, you will be making assumptions. You will have things that you know about these characters that isn't actually being communicated. Anytime you can get a new set of eyes, especially towards the end of the process, get those fresh eyes in there. It involves a lot of work that is not writing, and it involves a lot of time. And I think as independent audio producers, we have the opportunity to take the time we need and really work on the material and get it right. For Our Fair City, our production timelines were often well over a year from when we would start planning for the season to when we released our first episode. And I just, that time is so important. So we usually had a writer's room of 4 to 6 people. We would sit with that group and kick around ideas for what would happen in a season, kind of generally, what characters we wanted to use, what we wanted the plot lines to be, whether we were going to introduce new people, new characters, that is, to the work. And we'd talk about that, you know, we'd meet once a week for maybe 4 to 6 weeks and develop just a kind of basic outline of what we wanted to do. From there, you know, we'd take that outline and take a week or two to hash it into specific episodes with beats and a character list and an idea of what was going to happen specifically in each episode to flesh out that overarching plot for the season. And then we'd go away for usually a month or two, and all of the writers would write episodes. We'd then come back and over many more weeks read usually 2 to 3 episodes per night, again meeting once a week, and have the writer's room just read those out loud. And we learned so, so much from those sessions. We would then take those and rewrite them again. Sometimes we would scrap whole scripts. Sometimes we'd learn, oh, we need a whole nother episode in there to make this plot beat make sense. And then we'd take all of those rewritten scripts, gather our actors, and sit down and do a reading, usually over 2 days, because these were usually 19 to 20 episode seasons, a reading of every script back to back. And that not only let us hear the words in the actors' voices, but it let us learn a whole lot about the continuity when we were listening to everything back to back. Be like, oh, we're really repeating that beat, or oops, we're missing a whole step of the story still. So that kind of group table read was hugely important. And then over the next couple months, we'd go back and revise again. If there is a mantra here, it's get people around you, get their feedback, and revise, revise, revise. It's just going to make your work better. So yeah, I think getting comfortable with a really long development process is just such a good idea. It's going to lead to really much better work. So I guess the other piece of advice and maybe encouragement I can give as someone who has been working on processes like these over long periods of time is that if you feel like the work is bad, if you listen to it and you're like, ugh, this is horrible, that's a good thing. That means you can hear the problems, and even if you don't know how to fix it yet, someday with practice you will. So keep revising, keep working on it, or when you get to that point where you feel like you've gotten it to the place where you can, move on to the next thing, and then revise that a million times. The goal is never perfection. You're never going to get the script perfect. The goal is to be better than last time. And that's been just a core tenet of Heart Life's process. Better than last time. Thanks so much for having me on.
Okay. I am pretty much in agreement with what he has to say there. He's got some pretty solid points there. I think we probably should try to listen to the bit of dialogue that we've pulled out of his show, Our Fair City. It's from episode 419. That's season 4, episode 19. Neil Henderson.
Once again, Neil Henderson shovels as he was born to. Who could have guessed that what we flush away can be all that stands between civilization and annihilation? How odd that all of our hopes and dreams and lives depend upon that most ignominious of bodily byproducts and its most adept caretaker. That maestro of manure, that doge of dung, that prince of poopy. 6 straight hours he works without break or rest. 6 straight hours he labors for the good of the city. Something has to give. To all things there is a limit.
No. No, Betsy.
Mr. Henderson, the power levels have plateaued at 98%. Is something wrong?
Betsy. It's Betsy. She's gone.
Who's Betsy? A shovel? Henderson, did your
shovel break?
Betsy, I'm sorry.
I'll take that as a yes. We'll get you a new one. Power switcher, come in.
Andrew's sort of maintaining the power flow circuit with his body. Did you need something?
Never mind. West, go and make sure he doesn't die.
On my way.
Henderson, head down to the lower
fields and ask around for a shovel.
But I can't just abandon Betsy. She...
Out of the way. Who the hell are you? Neil Henderson, you get off your ass and save me this instant.
Allison?
I did not let you lead me across an unsurvivable frozen wasteland just so I could die because of a heat failure.
Or a food riot, or
a 22 megaton explosion.
I can't do it. I'm sorry to let you down.
Forget about me.
Think of all the people in the city who are counting on you. Think about the sick mole up here whose life you'll be saving again. Hell, think about your stupid little girlfriend and her stupid hair and her stupid dog and her stupid fleas.
She gave each one of them a name.
That's nice. Get up.
But, Betsy...
It's a shovel, Neil. A tool. And when a tool breaks, you get another tool.
You're wrong. Betsy was special.
Betsy didn't jump from the tower and survive.
Betsy didn't climb to the top of Stormhawk from the outside. Betsy didn't brave the frozen wasteland just so her little pet mole could see a vet. You did those things, Neil. You alone.
Can't everybody?
No, you idiot. No one can do any of that. A dozen riggers couldn't keep up with
you on the tundra.
They're dead because of me.
No, Neil. None of us would have made it back here without you. You're special, not your shovel. You. You saved us, and now there's a whole city that needs you to be special. So get up and find a new shovel, because you are Neil Henderson, and you have a job to do.
Oh. All right.
So I love their use of humor in a lot of the dialogue they do.
Oh, yeah.
It's one of the things that I encourage people to listen to Our Fair City for, because it's not like the show is, I can't even call it like a straight up comedy, but the comedy elements are just kind of interwoven into everything they do.
They do an excellent job of weaving comedy into their stories.
I agree. It's one of those things that doesn't necessarily work for every kind of story, but it's something that I feel like people should do more often. The kind of ridiculousness of some of the characters combined with the interesting back and forths that they're having with people just, it's a kind of flow that's going on that I really appreciate.
It's like the comedy, none of it ever seems forced. It totally belongs in that universe. Like the story wouldn't be the same without it, really.
Yeah, I agree. But I like the exchange, especially with, you can hear how the one doctor is getting so pissed off at this person for not understanding, or at Neil for not understanding how special he is. And that comes across very well in the way that the dialogue is written and how well the actors understand how their characters flow. It seems almost to be like a synergy between the writers and the actors at this point for some of these people that have been playing their character for a while. Because, I can just easily see how tight of a grip the writers have on the different forms of dialogue that different people do. So one of my favorite things that show does is they have so many different characters, but all of their voices are so dramatically different from each other. And I don't mean like the voice actor's voice. I mean cadence, I mean pacing, I mean word choice, sentence flow.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's almost like a different writer wrote every character, which is probably not possible, but it's great.
It does totally seem that way, though.
Yeah, and that's the way that a normal conversation would happen between especially eccentric people with large personalities. Everybody would be speaking with a different Bible of words, a different way of putting sentences together.
Well, next, I had the chance to speak to Faith McQuinn, the creator of Boom, an audio drama series. Let's listen to what she had to say about her process for writing believable dialogue.
Today, I'm talking with Faith McQuinn, creator of Boom, serialized audio drama. Faith, how are you?
Hi.
So today, I'd like to talk to you about writing believable dialogue.
The first thing I do before I even put any dialogue on the page is I write character biographies for all of my characters, and they're kind of intense. I know that the one I wrote for Porter is roughly 2 pages long.
Wow.
I find that if I write character biographies and really understand the background of my characters and what kind of life they like to live and the motivations they have, it's a lot easier for me to write for them because I pretty much sit there and decide this is how they would react in this situation. This is the kind of thing they would say. And it's a little easier for me to get it.
Gotcha. How about do's and don'ts? Do you kind of keep a list in your head of stuff that you know that particular characters don't do, or is that just included in your
bios? I guess it depends on the characters I'm writing. My overall do's and don'ts are I try very hard to not make all of my characters sound alike. It's really something I've worked out over the years of they can't all sound like me.
Right.
So I have to make decisions about what kind of vocabulary they use and how they structure their sentences and do they have tics? I made a decision when I wrote the first season that Myra never says okay. Anytime that somebody would normally say okay, she says all right instead. Or Luke says man over and over again, like, look, man, this is what we do, man. So I always have him saying that. So they all have their little tics because people normally have those. Mm-hmm. This is something I tell my students too. When you're trying to write natural dialogue for someone who isn't you, because I'm not in my early in my early 30s, I'm not a guy. So I tend to listen to conversations. Mm-hmm. So I'm a bit of an eavesdropper. Sorry to everybody I've been around in the past 15 years, but I'll sit in public places and just overhear conversations and try to pick up how different people talk, their cadences, their vocabulary, so I can keep that all in my head.
Do you feel that you've made some mistakes in the past?
Like I said about the people sounding all alike, I know that sometimes in my writing, I'll talk it out. And so it just comes out sounding all the same because I want this message to get across and it comes out just like I do. So I know I've made that mistake in the past and not really thought about, oh, this person is a lawyer. Oh, this person is a doctor. They can't sound like that. And just because I like how the flow is going, I never went back and checked myself, you know, taking the time to really say, oh, no, that's not how that would come out. I need to go back and check that. And I tend to do that when I'm writing faster, which is something I need to get around, that I need to have the dialogue happen, let it sit for a little while, then come back and read it again so that I've, you know, stepped away from it so I'm not so intimate with it right then.
You obviously need to figure out a way to put across some exposition without it sounding like exposition.
There are a few. I have a few tricks that I use. If I need to get it across, I'll just write it exactly like that. I had a teacher in college who called it Tide Talk. Mm-hmm. And it was basically him saying the way that people talk in commercials. Like, you know, if you're talking a Tide commercial, you're supposed to say Tide is the greatest. It does all this cleaning and you have to do this. So people in commercials will be like, and look how clean my thing came out. And so I tend to use Tide Talk in the first draft if I know that I have to get this exposition across. So it's at least on the page. And I say, hey, there's the thing I have to explain.
Nice.
I'll come back to it and learn how to explain it more naturally. Like, I have to get across that Anna and Porter are brother and sister. How do I do that? And then I figured out a way that, you know, if you're talking to your siblings, you both call your parents mom and dad.
Oh, yeah.
So I can go back and have Anna say, mom said this, like, mm-hmm. give her a reason to say mom or to say dad. And then you'll get the idea that they are
right.
siblings without me saying, but I'm your sister and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. I read in one of your posts earlier today that you used mm-hmm. to write short stories and prose. Do you have any tips for someone who may be only used to writing in prose and is looking to get into writing scripts?
The stories always work. Like, if you're writing a short story, you can make that same story work in a short film. You just have to learn new structure, basically, because stories happen as a retelling while scripts are basically a reenactment. So most of the time when you're writing a story, everything in the story's happened and you're reading about it after the fact. While in a film, it's all happening in front of you. So it's this idea of you have to be able to be in the moment in a script. I want my characters to always be in the moment instead of reflecting upon the moment. So I guess somebody who's coming from prose going to scripts basically has to go the other direction. They don't have time for reflection at the moment. They just have to keep their characters in the moment throughout a story.
Nice. That makes perfect sense. Faith, it's been great talking to you, and I hope to talk again soon.
Yeah, thank you. It was a pleasure to be here.
And here's a clip from episode 13 of Boom.
You don't know everything.
Then enlighten me. Is this about Genevieve? I mean, it has to be. He was fine, and then Jerkface gave that epic speech, and Porter lost his freaking mind.
Are you talking about Myra's crazy boyfriend?
Don't say that.
Like I've been saying, he seemed like a cool guy, but if someone's gonna get that crazy...
Stop calling him crazy!
Myra, honey, what are you yelling about?
Nothing, Dad.
She's mad that I called Porter crazy.
I told you to shut up.
Whoa, watch the blade, Mai.
Maybe I should cut the vegetables.
He's not... crazy. He's going through some things. He's seeing a therapist. He's fine.
Wait, what? He's seeing a therapist? Since when?
Since before we met.
What the hell, Mai? Like, how long before? What happened to him? Is he crazy?
Allie, you know him. He's not crazy. Come on, this is Porter.
Okay, but the Porter I know didn't act like the crazy person I saw last night.
Stop calling him crazy. He's not crazy. All kinds of people see therapists. I mean, Dax wouldn't have a job otherwise.
Okay. But seriously, why didn't I know about the therapy thing?
Why would you know that?
Because you tell me everything. Or at least you did.
Oh, please. Don't act all hurt right now. I know you and Luke have been talking again.
Wait, how did... Whatever. That's different, and it is a big deal. I'm not wrong, right? This is a big deal.
It's a big deal.
You don't get to talk. You met him a day ago. A day.
It's a rather important thing for people to know, Myra. The stability of the person you choose to spend your life with is not something you should take lightly.
Oh, so because I didn't share every detail of my life with you, I'm somehow not taking this relationship seriously? Why? Because I'm your baby girl and you think I can't take care of myself?
I didn't.
He saw his best friend get murdered, and you all expect him to be peachy keen after his other best friend brings her up at her fucking engagement party?
Murdered? Who was murdered?
So, man, I really like how the conversation itself escalates as the topic of what they're talking about is getting more and more intense.
The instant defensiveness of her boyfriend when everyone starts calling him crazy, and it just escalates, like you said, it escalates from there, and she just gets angrier and angrier, and just the whole tension in the room can be, you can just feel it.
Yeah, that's great. So just talking about key elements of the dialogue itself, I like the use of nicknames periodically, or how some people have nicknames, or almost pet names, it feels like.
Right.
And the idea that someone's getting indignant over what someone else, like, that's, if you think about it, like, that kind of dialogue is not necessarily for the plot, but it does a really good job of doing character development, or at least binding characters together.
Yeah.
Like, I think one of the mistakes that some people will make is neglecting dialogue that's not key and essential for the story, but it's more about making the characters believable. Because, man, that's a hard balance, because if you put too much of this kind of fluff dialogue in there, it can make your story kind of drone on.
Yeah, it can absolutely make for a boring story. I mean, you get this a lot in movies too. You get points in a film where you're just like, okay, come on, let's get to the next action scene or whatever. It is a very fine line.
Yeah, I think that may be one of the biggest things for all of these clips that we're listening to. Unless there's something that's key going on, like if you're currently under attack, you're probably not going to have banter. But the idea of this kind of it's not really pointless, but it's plot independent banter. It's more about character development and humanizing people. That is so natural. I mean, like, I don't know about you, but pretty much every time we get our cast together, we have this weird banter that goes on between people that can kind of get out of control.
Yeah, yeah.
I think we were talking about that a little bit ago at the AD meetup. It's really easy to have that kind of swing out of control also in your story if you focus on that too much. But there's some kind of weird balancing act that you may only be able to get through experience and listening to other people's shows to kind of get a feeling for what is an appropriate amount of banter versus, you know, moving the plot forward.
Right. So I also had the chance to talk to one of the godfathers of this very podcast, Matthew McLean, the creator of a Scottish podcast.
Okay, cool.
So I'm talking today with one of the godfathers of the audio drama production podcast, Matthew McLean, about writing believable dialogue. Matthew, how are you?
Hello, Austin. I'm very well, thanks. How are you?
I'm great. It's great to talk to you. So I'd like to talk to you about writing believable dialogue. Let's start with mistakes that you've made.
Yeah, so obviously, like anyone else who makes audio drama and is kind of self-taught, it was just a case back for myself and my colleague Robert, who work on stuff together back in the day, just listening to audio drama and, you know, tentatively putting together our early efforts. The show that we did at the time, it was called Aftermath, and you know, you just sit down and start writing. I think, like, looking back, some of the biggest issues with the dialogue that we were writing, and I think it's pretty common amongst anyone who starts writing dialogue, is just to have these conversations that are like huge presentations of information. Mm-hmm. So, like, one person just, you know, has this huge monologue where it's a lot of information's being presented, and the writer feels clever because they're like, okay, I've got that information out there, and now the person they're talking to could respond, and they could fill in loads of information as well. So on the one hand, like, you think you're being pretty clever because you're avoiding, in a sense, you're avoiding exposition, you're avoiding narration, but you're writing conversations that just aren't realistic. And after a wee while, I think you begin to, you know, through listening to quality audio drama, because we used to present this very podcast, we were fortunate enough to interview some brilliant folks who were writing audio drama as well. So you kind of learn as you go. And over time, I think, you know, when you do anything and you put a lot of time and passion into it, you start to get better at it. And, you know, hopefully we're in a position now where we're doing some pretty good stuff.
Do you think specializing in a genre is a good thing?
Yeah, I do, actually, because this is something we've kind of talked about before. I consider myself a bit of a one-trick pony. Like, although you've got me on because you obviously think I'm all right at this, I couldn't do what you do and write, you know, Winnebago Warrior and write it authentically, because that's not the world I live in.
Yeah.
Now, I know the counter-argument is that people write fiction in all sorts of worlds that they don't live in. You've got sci-fi, you've got fantasy, and you've got all sorts of different places in the world. But, you know, some writers are able to do that. Some writers seem able to just dive into a world or a culture and do things pretty authentically. I'm not worried about sort of specialising, if that's the right word, in the genre, which is, you know, I've come to, after writing a few different one-offs, set in different places, I've really found a comfortable position just writing dialogue in Scotland. And it's very down-to-earth, very working-class stories. Writers shouldn't be afraid to be pigeonholed, I think. You know, I think it could be a mistake to feel like, well, you know, I've wrote this fantasy story, I should try sci-fi, I should set something in America, I should set something in the Middle East. You know, if you want to do that, brilliant. But by all means, you know, specialise, find a niche and just really dive in and become the sort of master of that niche. You know, the passion hopefully shines through in the writing and the production.
What exactly is your process for authentic dialogue? I mean, how do you go about it?
It's just a case of sitting down and writing. And I think if you can get past that difficult first step of finding your characters, but I think, like, you know, establishing characters, certainly for me, a character's never been the finished article, certainly not in the first couple of episodes. It might take them a while to find their feet, find their voice, and you begin to just know. And I think that this is the real beauty of doing an ongoing series, ongoing characters, is that you really just get to know these characters, and you kind of, you know, they come alive, you know what they would say, what they wouldn't say, what their motivations are. And just knowing all that stuff really helps you to write the dialogue much easier, basically. So, you know, I'll sit down and bash out a first draft, which I'll generally, you know, be really happy with. I'm one of the many folk that I try not to edit as I write, so I try and make the editing process different. By editing, I mean written editing.
Right.
But, you know, not going back and tweaking things, unless there's an obvious plot detail that maybe needs changed. But just trying to get that first draft down, and if possible, leaving it maybe a week or two, coming back to it, tweaking it again. And then what I like to do is get on a call with Robert or get him round and just read through the scripts, because he's always got some good feedback as well. And just make sure that we're happy with it before sending it out to the actors. Recording-wise, we're predominantly remote cast, which, again, you know, it's just something I've always done and it's worked for me. Mm-hmm. Just having access to the sort of global talent that you do nowadays with remote casts, and the actors that we work with, you know, I'm fortunate enough that they always interpret the dialogue really well. They bring the character to life. They send back not only a great performance, but great quality audio, and it makes it, you know, a pleasure to work with. Once you get past the dialogue editing stage, which is never fun, but over time you get into your wee workflows, you get things nailed down a bit more, it becomes a smoother process.
It really does get to the point to where when you're writing lines for different characters, you get to the process of, or to the point of, well, that character wouldn't say this, that probably this other character would say that. And especially, you know, once you've heard the voices of your voice actors for those particular characters, you really start hearing their voices in your head as you're writing, and the characters really do kind of come alive and almost write themselves.
If I'm writing a character who I haven't cast, so I like to at least have, even if I maybe end up, you know, they're too busy to do it or something like that, if I just have an actor's voice in mind when I'm writing a character, I find that really helps, because, you know, if you're just writing a character and you've no idea who's going to voice them, it's pretty difficult, I find. It's, you know, you don't know the character as it is, and you don't really know how they're going to sound. So, you know, it's not Hollywood. You're not bringing in 20, 30 actors to get them to read the script and audition and that. And I don't really do auditions anyway. I'm more of a, you know, I know enough, a small group of people that I kind of know and trust to kind of either go to them directly or ask them for recommendations for voices. Dialogue is conversations. And to write authentic conversations, you actually need to have conversations in real life. And by mean that, I don't mean conversations on Twitter and Facebook and all the other social media platforms. You've got to really engage with the real world, the offline world. So actually talk to people. Instead of sitting on your phone, talk to your family, talk to your friends, talk to your parents and grandparents as much as you can, you know, because they won't always be here. And don't just be a talker as well. That's the thing. Be a listener too. So listen to speech patterns, the ebbs and flows of conversation, the unfinished points and subject changes. How do people respond? How do they interrupt or react to each other? And small talk as well, like so many nuggets can be found in casual small talk. You know, that chatter that you'll hear in a waiting room or bus shelter. And people think this is the small stuff, like the mundane stuff, but it's actually the big stuff. Because if you get your characters talking right, then they'll always be able to deliver the big plot information when the time comes, you know, without exposition or forcedness or woodenness.
Well, Matthew, thank you so much. I appreciate you taking the time to come on your own show.
Thank you, Austin. I appreciate the opportunity.
And here's a clip from episode 11, Grapes of Wrath.
You all right?
I'm fine. I'm just something I ate, I reckon. That fucking breakfast.
You're white as a sheet.
I was absolutely fine until we lost sight of the mainland. I guess it's just having all that sea around us in every direction.
Aye, and a couple of miles worth of the stuff under our feet too, probably. Tide's calmed down a bit now, though. We were up and doing like a hoor's knickers about half an hour ago.
How's Bill?
Aye, he's fine, aye. He pished himself, but you can't really tell with the waves splashing over the sides.
Did you see the whale earlier?
No, but I saw some dolphins were tailing us. We kept quiet about it though, in case your man up there started trying to get a selfie with them.
Good call.
To be fair, he's kept his eye on the wheel. Hopefully he knows where he's going. I don't want to end up shipwrecked on some wee fucking rock.
You know, it's funny. The other day I was listening to this podcast called Campfire Radio Theatre, and they did a story about the lighthouse on Flannan Island, which isn't too far from here. And I swear, two of the characters sounded exactly like...
Land ahoy, lads!
Where? I can't see fuck all.
Oh, aye, look. Over there.
Right enough.
It's been a long journey. We're nearly there.
St. Caelic, eh?
Aye. 95 years of mystery. About to be solved by the Terror Files.
Have you ever heard that episode of Campfire Radio Theater?
No.
It's called The Ghosts of Flannan Lighthouse, and it's actually Matthew and Robert playing the two characters in it.
Yeah, I kind of got that feeling from the dialogue in there that was a direct reference to that, but that's cool.
Yeah, that's another example of a show that does the perfect balancing act of blending comedy into an otherwise basically horror story.
Yeah, I think it helps a lot with, you know, there's a couple of different kinds of horror stories you can tell. One of my favorite kinds is the ones where they flip back and forth between the you got to make fun of this otherwise you're gonna cry and the actual horror.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, it's always good to hear a cameo or a side reference to something like that. I also like how it was slid in there in such a way that if you were not familiar that what they're talking about is something in real life and not just part of the show, it doesn't detract from it.
Right.
So it's kind of like a nod or a inside joke that doesn't pull you out of the story. And that was pretty cool. See, I keep thinking that we need to have more exchanges of content between shows is just kind of inside jokes.
I agree. Absolutely.
We'll have to figure out more ways that we can do that. I really like that as a concept. But yeah, so dialogue wise, I think that everything we listened to today is clearly, I mean, because we chose it, fine examples of dialogue. We wouldn't have chosen ones that we didn't respect. My key takeaways are I really like their use of character building versus or the balancing of character building versus plot dialogue. Mm-hmm. The use of the interesting nod that was done in the Scottish podcast that I actually don't know that many shows that do that kind of thing,
mm-hmm.
Especially built into the plot itself. That's fantastic.
My takeaways from these are the subtle nuances between characters. Give each character their own little thing so that you know that their dialogue is definitely, even if you were reading it on a page, you would know that's that particular character's line because that's something that he or she would say.
Yeah, I think a lot of it's really important to just work on developing individual voices. And I know a lot of people, what they'll do is they'll base individual characters off of the way that people they know speak, because it's one of the only ways to, well, it's one of the easiest ways to differentiate people is to think of, like we do that all the time, is that we'll think about, oh, well, this person is just a combination of so-and-so and so-and-so, either a famous actor from a show or just somebody we know. And then, like, I've actually consulted people and I'm like, hey, we're writing a story about a spooky character and the main character's dialogue is based off of the way you speak. I'm going to send you a section of their dialogue and just let me know if there's something that's completely off ball for what you would say.
Nice.
I think it's also worth paying attention, like sitting around in some public space where you're going to hear a lot of dialogue, like a coffee shop or a bookstore or not really a bar because it's kind of hard to hear people there. But any place where people are going to be talking and just focusing without looking like a creep on like one or two people's conversations, like one conversation at a time, and try to pick out what's so unique about the way that person speaks. And even if you need to take notes, like write down, they use the word potato a lot or whatever, like they use this particular verb way more than most people do, or they end questions on a downtick rather than an uptick, or all these things that are still part of recognizable as pretty standard English. But they're just weird nuances that all of us have.
Well, this has been a great conversation.
Oh, yeah, I agree. This episode was brought to you with the support of our patrons through Patreon.
For more information about how to become a patron, go to patreon.com/ADPP.
Where you can get some interesting perks as thanks for your support.
Don't forget to check us out at audiodramaproduction.com.
Thanks to our line producer and editor, Tanya Milojevic.
And our executive producer, Matthew Boudreau.
We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening. Thank you.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.